This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Why?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. I imagine a lot of people are calling their congressional representatives and asking, why is oil $130 a barrel? Why does it cost $60 to fill up my gas tank? So today, a Senate committee will take those questions straight to oil company executives and ask them why. Dan Gretsch reports.
What the senators will get, says Jorge Piñon with the University of Miami, is a shrug.
It is futures market, just like corn, just like wheat, just like orange juice, that sets the price of oil, not international oil companies.
He says private oil companies have direct control of just 10% of the world's reserves. The lion's share is in the hands of governments like Venezuela, Nigeria, and in the Middle East. Piñon says there's only one country in the world right now with control over world oil prices, and it's not the United States.
It is Saudi Arabia, the only country in the world that today has spare production capacity of about 1 million barrels per day.
President Bush recently asked Saudi Arabia to open the valves. The Saudi royal family answered him with a shrug. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
By the way, Honda said today it'll start selling a new hybrid next year. It's supposed to be cheaper than the current group of hybrids, only a couple thousand dollars more than a Civic. Oil hitting $130 this morning is keeping Wall Street in check. The Dow is up just 3 points to 13,832. Sorry, 12,000. The NASDAQ has gained 9, and the S&P 500 is up 3. In Asia, the markets finish mostly lower, and European shares are mixed so far. Italy's Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi held his cabinet meeting today in Naples, not in Rome as usual. He's trying to show that he cares about the awful garbage problem in Naples. We've talked about this before with reporter Megan Williams, and she joins us once again. Megan, I have this image of a man in an Armani suit, ankle deep in trash. Is that about right?
Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, one of the big scandals about Berlusconi going down to Naples is that he's staying in a 5,000 euro suite, which is, you know, about 9,000 U.S. dollars a night. So I don't know how much he's going to be actually walking around the streets. But if he does, I mean, you know, what he's in for is huge colonies of rats and cockroaches and garbage juice. The whole area, it smells terribly. There's 50,000 tons of garbage in the streets in the region, and about almost 4,000 of that in Naples itself.
And what is Berlusconi proposing to do about it?
Well, what people are expecting might come out of the meeting is that he will force these local communities in and around Naples to set up the garbage dumps that the government has been trying to get them to accept for a while now, and the incinerators. People have been really resisting that because they've had it up to here with garbage. They say, take it somewhere else. We've been taking the garbage from the north for the past 30 years. We don't want to have garbage dumps, even if they're properly managed. So he may just force that on people, and he may also bring in the army to do it.
What about the European Union? Is it getting involved in this?
Well, about 2 weeks ago, the EU took Italy to court. It's filed a lawsuit against Italy for its inaction around this issue. Italy is not a country that lacks either means or know-how. What it is lacking is just accountability. I mean, nobody's accountable. No one can make a decision here on a political level. What you've got, you know, quite literally is a big stinking mess with the rats and the cockroaches running the show. The mafia has gladly taken over this crisis.
Megan, we've talked about this issue before, and last time we mentioned how it might affect the price of mozzarella. How's that going?
Well, mozzarella sales are still down, and I think the mozzarella industry has been working very hard to try and convince people that the pollution levels in the mozzarella caused by the burning fire is low and there's no direct connection. It's very difficult to prove.
All right, Megan Williams in Rome. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Barnes & Noble and Borders dominate the book-selling business. Now there's the possibility they might become one giant company. The Wall Street Journal says Barnes & Noble is studying a buyout of Borders. Together, they would have more than a third of the market. That's bound to raise the old antitrust flags, though. But Time Warner and Time Warner Cable said today they are splitting. As part of the divorce, shareholders will get a one-time dividend, almost $11 billion, courtesy of the cable side. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, May 21st on Marketplace.org. Congress may vote today on a bill that would renew billions of dollars in tax breaks for clean energy projects. The bill's supporters say the money is needed despite record investment from the private sector. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The House bill would extend about $54 billion in expired tax breaks for renewable energy sources. Even without government subsidies, renewable energy projects in the U.S. are booming. Just last week, Texas oil man T. Boone Pickens announced a $2 billion investment in what's been billed the world's largest wind farm. But Jim Presswood with the Natural Resources Defense Council says it's still too early to end federal support.
At some point in the future, we'll reach that point, but we haven't yet. And if you're going to wean them off prematurely, that could result in some pretty serious setbacks in the industry.
He says the budding solar, biomass, and geothermal industries still need subsidies to compete with cheaper coal-fired electricity. Many of these projects are on hold while funders wait to see whether Congress renews the tax credits. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
With gas prices and food prices, people aren't exactly splurging at the mall. And so retailers have a lot to be worried about. We're getting more profit reports from them this week. Jeff Tyler has more.
Many stores are seeing a drop in sales as consumers wait out the slow economy.
Consumers really are strapped for money, cash flow. And if they don't have to buy another skirt or another blouse or another sport jacket, they're going to put it off.
That's Richard Feinberg, professor of retail management at Purdue University. He says high-end retailers will make out slightly better since they have wider profit margins and their customers tend to have more money. Feinberg says many retailers are now looking beyond sales to cutting expenses. He also says the weak dollar could be good for business.
The only thing that will help retailers is if Europeans come over here and start buying out the store, and I think some of the high-end stores are seeing that.
Americans are starting to receive their government rebate checks. Feinberg says that could be good for retailers, since consumers won't feel quite as broke. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Which brings us to a story about sneakers that cost a ridiculous amount of money. And by ridiculous, I don't mean $200. I mean a lot more than that. Nike and Adidas have been working with hip urban artists to create one-of-a-kind shoes, collector's items that some people just have to have. Stephen Hoffman has our story.
Al Tiemann and his 14-year-old son, Brandon, are shopping at the RAS sneaker store in L.A.'s Little Tokyo district. The price on the pair that Brandon is looking at, it's making Al's eyes stand out. They cost $10,000.
I don't get it. I just don't get this.
Al's son, Brandon, is what you might call a sneaker freak. He's almost addicted to shoes. He's amassed a collection worth thousands of dollars and paid for it out of his own pocket. He's constantly scouring the net and shops like RAF to find more, regardless of the price.
You know what? Not even gonna lie to you. I don't have $10,000, but if I did, I'd pay for them.
You pay for your car first.
No, I buy those over a car.
It's not unusual for shoes to cost thousands of dollars. RAF manager Edward Mateo points out another pair.
Well, right now we're looking at the Nike Dunk Stash. The current market value of these shoes, if you can find them, is $4,500 on the street.
The Dunk Stash, a sort of ordinary-looking gray and black low top, weren't always this expensive. When they were first released, they cost less than $200, but only 50 pairs were ever made. That made them irresistible to collectors, and it pushed the price through the roof. Edward Mateo says sneakers like these are just like any other limited edition product, except that sometimes they're designed by people with a unique appeal.
My name is Mr. Cartoon. I'm best known for tattooing. I've drawn a lot of different canvases from skin to Nike shoes.
You may not know Mr. Cartoon, But if you've ever watched MTV, you've seen his work on artists like Beyonce or 50 Cent. He convinced Nike that his tattoo designs and street cachet could make for some pretty popular shoes.
This is the LA Cortez. It's, the official LA logo.
While he might not be the kind of guy you associate with a brand like Nike, Mr. Cartoon is idolized in sneaker circles. Designs like his Brown Pride Air Force One sell out in a matter of hours. RAF store manager Edward Mateo says sneakers designed by urban tastemakers are like wearable art, even if they're not wearable.
If they were too tight on my feet, I would buy them anyway, and I would take out the insole or just leave them on my mantle in my fireplace at home.
Still looking around for my size, I'm Stephen Hoffman for Marketplace.
China said the earthquake death toll has now reached 41,000 people and still growing. To the south in Myanmar, or Burma, 134,000 people are dead or missing because of a cyclone 2 weeks ago. Commentator Will Wilkinson says these aren't just natural disasters, they're also man-made.
The poverty that exposes people to nature's dangers also kills. And that kind of poverty is no inevitability. It requires a human hand. Back in the early 1950s, Burma was the wealthiest nation in Southeast Asia. But today, after half a century of socialism and authoritarian rule, it's one of the poorest countries in the world. When a regime mows down a gathering of political protesters, we sit up and take notice. But when it actively impoverishes its people with economic policies long ago proven harmful, we're too willing to see this not as a choice to which men may be held accountable, but as a natural fact under no one's control. So it wasn't fated that tens of thousands of Burmese would have so little shelter from the storm. They could have been richer, safer. In 1995, an earthquake rocked wealthy Kobe, Japan, ranking as the most expensive natural disaster in history. Yet only 6,400 lives were lost. Compare the Sichuan earthquake. Catastrophe modeling firm AIR estimates total damages will exceed $20 billion, only about one-tenth the economic loss of the Kobe earthquake. But the human toll is over five times greater. China, thankfully, is on its way up the growth path to higher ground. Burma, well, it's a tragic illustration that natural disasters are all disaster and only part natural. Economic growth creates roofs that don't blow away, walls that don't crumble, hospitals to tend the sick, and generators to keep the ventilators on. The self-dealing thugs that botch the institutions of growth don't just keep their people poor. They keep them vulnerable, exposed.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. You can find a link to his blog on our website, marketplace.org. And feel free to share your thoughts with us. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.